Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimsanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is October 17th, 2012. This is show number 40 with our co-host, Dr. Adil Chimsanawala Kasim, MD, a fourth-generation homeopath who has been guiding us in the repertory all of these months, and teaching us from his life experience. We welcome you today to the show. I have the chat on, and you can comment, or you can call in to 347-945-6956. And
Hello.
I'm glad
you?
You're with us. And today I wanted to just, because it's the 40th, show. I'm going to say life begins at 40, but so do fallen arches, rheumatism, faulty eyesight, and the tendency to tell a story to the same person three or four times. Well, with homeopathy, let's hope all of those fallen arches are staying perky, and we like to tell our stories more than once or twice.
Exactly. And I'm also nearing 40. But by God's grace, I'm very fit and fine.
Well, you're teaching us how to keep that way. And we're going to have, today's show is dedicated to a stalwart of homeopathy. And I know you're going to introduce that.
Yeah. And he's none other than Dr. Mahendra Singh, a legendary homeopath, an ardent teacher of homeopathic philosophy, and a person whom he is actually the teacher of my father also. So he becomes my teacher. And we have had personal family relations with him since a long, long time. This gentleman who had a passion to groom the future citizens of India in homeopathy, he passed away at 3:30 a.m. on 15th of October. I remember in 1992, it was a full auditorium with more than 1,000 people. And the session continued beyond lunchtime. He had come to Nagpur and we had invited him on 26th of January on our anniversary celebrations. And so when some delegates became restless, a voice sounded from the dais, "Please be seated till the session is over. The speaker is also hungry." A pin drop silence then followed, and this charismatic voice belonged to none other than Dr. Mahendra Singh. This name is synonymous with homeopathy in India for more than now 40 years. He hailed from Bihar, a very ordinary family. Bihar is a state in northern India. And he graduated from the Calcutta Homeopathic Medical College in 1960, one of the very, very old homeopathic medical colleges. I believe practically it's one of the first homeopathic colleges to be started in India. I'm not sure about that, but he graduated from there. And then he started teaching Organon since 1962. He was very well known for his concern for the poor, downtrodden and suffering people. And this he had inherited from his family values. After teaching for so many years, he held various positions as teacher of Organon and in the national arena of India as the chairman of Education Committee, Central Council of Homeopathy. And He was also elected as National President, Homeopathic Medical Association of India, one of the largest homeopathic organizations India has. He also has authored several books. The latest work, the first corrected and retranslated edition of Organon of Medicine, is simply amazing. Last Monday, on 8-10, that is 8th of October, in the morning he had a fall in his room and had a trochanteric fracture of the left femur. He was hospitalized and operation was planned for the 9th, but due to some anomalies in his blood count and potassium level, the surgery was postponed and ultimately was operated on afternoon of 12th of October. He was fine after surgery, but after about 3 hours he started giving signs of distress. Ultimately, he was put on ICU. The next day, on the ventilator, but then things unfortunately started going from bad to worse, and he left us in the early morning on Monday, that is 15th of October 2012. And such stalwarts can never be replaced, as is the case with respectable Professor Mahendra Singh. I request the audience to join me in prayers for rest and peace for his departed soul. His son, Dr. Subhash Singh, is a very, very eminent homeopath himself, and via this medium, via Homeopathic World Community and all the audience, we extend our heartfelt condolences to him and the entire family.
Thank you for sharing with us.
Also, we have another stalwart whose death anniversary is on 15th of October, and that is none other than Dr. Pierre Schmidt. Dr. Pierre Schmidt, MD, he was born on 22nd July 1894, and he received his early education in Geneva. He came to know about homeopathy in 1918 in London, where he saw the results of homeopathic treatment during an epidemic of flu. There, while residing in London, he met Dr. J.H. Clark and Dr. John Weir. And in 1922, he migrated to the United States, learned homeopathy from Austin and Gladwin. At that time, both Austin and Gladwin were working as a core faculty of the American Foundation School. Then, Schmidt returned to Geneva and set up his practice there. He taught pure homeopathy to several generations of physicians in Europe. He wrote many pamphlets and helped into editing the final repertory of Kent. He translated Organon into French, and Dr. Gladwin always used to refer Schmidt as Sunshine. Robert Shore, Dr. Joe Kunzli's student, had paid a brief visit to Dr. Schmidt in 1979, and he penned down the following words for Dr. Pierre Schmidt, and I quote, "I was impressed with the grandeur of his office, a very large room containing hundreds of volumes of homeopathic tests and journals, many carefully bound in leather. His custom-built wood remedy cabinets were magnificent. His examination room was a smaller adjacent room containing an exam table, an instrument table, and an acupuncture chart on the wall. I browsed around while I waited about 20 minutes for him to enter the room. I will always remember the first thing he said to me in a very abrupt manner, 'What questions do you have?' I had gone there just to meet him and chat about homeopathy in Europe, and I found myself intimated as if I was in an audience with the Pope. I introduced myself as a student of his student, Dr. Jost Kunzli, who arranged for me to meet him. We had a very brief conversation. He said that it was very important to study everything about homeopathy and to have questions. He also mentioned that acupuncture could be an adjunct to homeopathy as long as the doctor was familiar with both systems of therapy." So this was what Dr. Robert Shore had to say about Dr. Pierre Schmidt. Well, in 1925, he established a very, very important organization, and that is none other than Liga Medicorum Homeopathic Internationalists, an international organization of classical homeopathic physicians. And just in last month, last 15th of September, we had an international congress at Japan, Nara, Japan. Schmidt had a 3,000 plus volume library of homeopathic literature, which is now in the occupancy of a trust in St. Gallien, Switzerland. This library is now used for research purposes. So, friends, again, like last time, we pay our humblest tributes to two stalwarts, late Dr. Mahendra Singh and Dr. Pierre Schmidt. And with this, we start today's discourse or discussion on dropsy.
This is continuation from last week?
Yeah, exactly. But before I go further, talking about dropsy, just this Saturday, a 52-year-old female, menopausal female, came to me, and she reported having fever without chills for 7 months, and dropsy, entire generalized dropsy, for past 6 months. Her ESR was 49, not much. She had been investigated and reinvestigated, and all the investigations had come out to be normal. And she had received two courses of anti-typhoid antibiotics at some place before coming to me. They had also attempted, since she also had bilateral hydrothorax, they also attempted to give her anti-tuberculosis medicine. But within 3 days of receiving anti-TB drugs, she reacted and she had severe rash and was excessive vomiting and hepatitis, so they were stopped. Again, a second course was tried. Again, it was stopped. And then she was off medication. But she was deteriorating day by day. There was no body pain, no rash. So when she had come to me this Saturday, I examined her and found severe pallor. And the entire her BP was also normal. Everything else was normal, excepting that she had sternal tenderness, that is tenderness on sternum. So I asked her history. Did anything happen to you 7 months ago, something, some sad incident? And they all denied. She was accompanied with her son. And she did not speak any much. She was looking depressed, morose. Ultimately, her son said, I said, see, if we are suspecting some major incidents, there was a hunch in my, I felt something that this lady has to suffer from something more than routine tuberculosis, and I was suspecting malignancy. But I was not sure which organ of the body would be involved. Anyway, so I just asked, did something happen to you? And she did not speak, but her son said that her elder sister, the daughter of this lady, she committed suicide 9 months ago. And since then, my mom is, unwell. So this was a huge shock. And of course, the way she had come to me, she had severe pallor and sternal tenderness. I was quite sure of malignancy, and I suspected leukemia. But then, when I repertorized fever without chills and dropsy, the drug was APIS and thirstless. She was absolutely thirstless lady. And second thing I had got was ailment from grief and sadness. The drug was natrum muraticum. So I combined all the three, fever, dropsy, and ailments from grief. And I prescribed her natrum muraticum 30 to be taken 4 times a day. This was Saturday. Because the next day was Sunday, they did not want to get hospitalized. So I called them on Monday. And for the first time, she came and reported on Monday. And for the first time, 2 days, she had taken natrum muraticum. She had actually asked for food. For 7 months, she had not asked for food. She was just eating, and her appetite has absolutely decreased. She was just eating because she had to eat. But then that was first time after natrum muraticum. She started having meals. And again, for the first time in 7 months, she was afebrile for full 2 days. Saturday, Sunday, afebrile. Even Monday when she had come to me, she was afebrile. We did her bone marrow, and unfortunately, the report turned out to be acute myeloid leukemia with neutrophils only 6. Normal, you have counted 60, 60. She had only 6 neutrophils. Of course, bad position. We discussed the pros and cons. They did not want to continue with homeopathy. Were well convinced that homeopathy acted because it was the first time patient asked for food. First time patient was afebrile for seven months. In spite of taking steroids, in spite of receiving anti-TB drugs, in spite of receiving two or three different types of antibiotics for different reasons. Still, she was never afebrile for 7 months. Natrum, ureticum. So, a lovely case. Of course, very sad for the patient because she is in a critical state. But then I wanted to share. And so, whenever you get a case of dropsy, a case of severe anemia, a case above 50, 55 years, and you get a sternal tenderness, please think of malignancy, leukemia. She had undergone a whole body CT scan, and still the diagnosis was missed. Of course, it was not missed, but probably did not show at that time. And all the investigations, her liver function test, her kidney function test, all were normal, excepting that bone marrow was not done, not even thought of, that no one thought of malignancy. So, of course, for the patient,
how come it didn't come into their mind to think of it?
Sorry, I lost your voice.
I'm wondering what they did, so many exams, so many lab tests, and why is it that they
I have no answer to that. Even the hemato-oncologist, who did the bone marrow, he was surprised. I said, and he asked me, why did you refer the case? I mean, I'd sent this lady to one hemato-oncologist. And he was quite surprised. Why have you come referred me? I said, sir, I have a hunch that I'm dealing with blood malignancy. So please rule that out for me. And he did a bone marrow, and in the evening he told me the report. And he said that your hunch is correct. She is indeed suffering from acute myeloid leukemia. So this was the report we got on Monday. And of course, I asked them whether they still wanted to continue homeopathy. But then, of course, she was referred to me by my patient. So they did not have much faith on homeopathy, although they were convinced of his actions. But, I mean, you can't force people. What I was saying was about this case. It is always a great lesson that if you have nothing, long-standing fever, long-standing dropsy, and you should think of blood malignancies, sometimes it may come positive as well.
Okay. So we do have on Homeopathy World Community, we have a copy of the presentation if somebody wants to look at the PDF file as you're talking today.
Yeah. And last time, as we started with dropsy, we discussed what is dropsy and edema, whether we spell it with OEDEMA or EDEMA. It's an abnormal accumulation of fluid beneath the skin and cavities. Then we classified them as pitting and non-pitting types. And we discussed the various disorders where we can get generalized dropsy, as well as a particular condition which is called as epidemic dropsy. Very few people know about this condition, which is caused by poisoning or adulteration of edible oils with Argemone Mexicana oil, an oil which is not edible by human beings, but still if it gets mixed or is specifically adulterated, I mean, people adulterate those oils. In third world countries where, things are expensive, such malpractices are followed, including in India, and we have had cases of epidemic dropsy in certain parts of India. So we had discussed last time about epidemic dropsy. Organ-specific dropsies also we discussed, like cerebral edema, pulmonary edema, dropsy around the cornea of the eye, around the periorbital, around the orbits of the eye, as well as we talked about lymphedema, that is dropsy because of blockage of lymph vessels, as well as myxedema, that is caused because of severe hypothyroidism. Also, we talked about a very rare condition called as hydrops fetalis. That is a condition which occurs in the fetus and is characterized by accumulation of fluid or dropsy in at least two fetal compartments. Very, very few fetuses survive, and they are aborted or they are stillbirths take place. So hydrops fetalis basically is a condition. But once this occurs, suppose if a female does abort a baby of hydrops fetalis, a completely bloated fetus, or gives a stillbirth. 8 months she is pregnant, and on the 8th month she is delivered this fetus. The baby does not survive, although. But if you see a completely bloated female, this fetus, then before the next pregnancy, the female has to take both the female and the partner, her partner has to take one dose of sifilinum so that such babies are not born again. Hydroxyurea. So we had discussed about that. So all in all, let us revise about what are the mechanisms, why does dropsy at all occur. The commonest reason is increased hydrostatic pressure. Hydro means water and static means the pressure exerted on the wall of the arteries at that point of time. So whenever that pressure increases, that means the pressure inside the arteries increase, then the fluid is forced out of the arteries and goes out and out the out of the vessels and collects in the place outside them in extravascular areas. Second is reduced oncotic pressure. Whenever a fluid is there in a compartment, it has certain types of pressure which is called as oncotic pressure. And in the blood, the oncotic pressure is because of proteins in the blood. So if we have got hypoproteinemia, that is the proteins in the blood or plasma decreases because of whatever reasons, then the fluid is trickles out and collects in the extravascular compartment, again causing edema. Increased blood vessel permeability. If there is a reason, the blood vessels basically are very, very non-permeable structures. But for some reason, if they are damaged or destroyed, then the fluid can ooze out from the blood vessels and still collect outside. Suppose if there is obstruction of fluid clearance by the lymphatic system. If lymphatic system is blocked at particular areas, then again you can have edema or dropsy. And changes in the water retaining properties of the tissues themselves, particularly the kidneys. So there are, these are the few reasons why you can have edema or dropsy. Having said that, now how do you manage dropsy? Of course, the rubric which we are discussing is dropsy on page number 829, and that is related to chest itself. So chest itself, we can have dropsy or fluid collection in the pleural cavity, which we call as pleural effusion. You can have fluid collection in the lung tissue, which we call as pulmonary edema. And one of the predominant features of pulmonary edema is difficult respiration or shallow respiration, given on page number 770. Please refer to page number 770, respiration difficult, edema pulmonary. There's a separate rubric given for respiration difficult, pulmonary edema. Only a single drug is given, although, I repeat, 770.
Okay, I have also
Specifically pulmonary edema, there's a rubric given respiration difficult, edema pulmonary, page 770.
I have posted in the chat as well.
Yeah. So, that is a specific remedy. Since we are talking about pulmonary edema, one of the very, very important drugs to be thought of in acute pulmonary edema is caffeine. Simple coffee, caffeine. And caffeine is a wonderful drug for acute pulmonary edema. Acute pulmonary edema is an emergency situation. It's a life-threatening situation. It requires immediate hospitalization and management in the ICCU. But as far as homeopathy is concerned, apart from other drugs like arsenic, like strophanthus, like carbovig, there is a specific drug, caffeine, which can be used in acute pulmonary edema. We use it in millisimal potencies, either 0/1 or 0/2, depending how the situation is. We repeat it every 10 minutes, every 15 minutes, or every half an hour or 1 hour, seeing the situation. But acute pulmonary edema, we do have in homeopathy. Or at least, if the patient has to be shifted from place A to place B, if the ICCU is far apart, and if you have got caffeine, even in tincture form, then you can use this drug for acute pulmonary edema. Anyway, so for generalized dropsy, when you have got swelling of the entire body, whatever reason it may be because of kidney disorders like nephrotic syndrome, it may be because of liver cell failure, or it may be because of congestive heart failure, or simple anemia, as I narrated the case. this lady had got generalized edema, right? Puffiness around the eyes, mild ascites, hydrothorax, then edema of the feet, edema of the sacrum. So the first drug to be thought of is arsenic album. This drug is suitable in all forms of dropsy, and especially if there is organic disease of the heart, lungs or kidneys. And you can definitely find puffiness of the face. And the skin has a typical waxy, transparent skin, and it becomes waxy, like ferrum met, like acetic acid. Acetic acid also has got a waxy, if you feel the skin, particularly of the face, you have a waxy appearance. There is excessive thirst. The patient typically asks for small sips of water. Although, in such cases, we restrict water to up to 1 liter per day in 24 hours. But still, arsenic album patients or people requiring arsenic album would ask for water. And there is vomiting, not nausea. It is direct vomiting. Sometimes, because of the edema, you can have ulcers with serum oozing from the legs. Small ulcers called stress ulcers or varicose ulcers can develop. And from there, you can have oozing of serous fluid. So such cases require arsenic alb. We prefer to give arsenic alb in very low potencies. In chapter of boric, boric's repertory, arsenic alb is also the remedy given for euthanasia or mercy killing. If you read it, so it is advisable that in such grave pathologic conditions, arsenic should not be, unless otherwise indicated, or if there is a strong indication, should not be given in high potencies. You can manage in low potencies and infrequent repetitions. You do not repeat arsenic very often. A special caution for arsenic, because I have seen patients dying because of very high doses or very high potencies of arsenic, or low potencies but in very frequent repetitions. So you don't give arsenic very frequently. Arsenic is a very good drug. It stabilizes the patient quite fast, so the repetition is not so frequent as required. You may give it thrice a day or at the most 4 times a day, but not every 10 minutes or every 15 minutes or 20 minutes, as like other drugs you can give. Then if your patient is, and generally arsenic is a remedy to be thought of in very acute situations, in crisis situations. If the patient has dropsy, generalized dropsy, but is walking up and about, then you can think of, or hemodynamically stable, you would think of drugs like acetic acid or apocynum can. Both acetic acid and apocynum can have got excess of sweating and thirst, particularly thirst. And acetic acid has got waxing, emaciated skin, dropsy in the lower limbs, particularly in the abdomen. The upper part is not dropsical. And there is a sour belching with water brash and diarrhea. So acetic acid has got excess thirst, excess sweating, excess stools, and edema generally concentrated in the lower limbs and lid ascites. Whereas apocynum, you have got, in spite of having swelling generalized, you have got excess of thirst, even excess hunger. But moment the food is in the mouth, person can't tolerate. There's nausea. So cannot tolerate food. Apocynum cannot tolerate morsels of food. Excess thirst is there, apocynum. He or she asks for water, but moment he starts drinking, the small amount of gulp of water causes great distress in the stomach. Along with all these symptoms, apocynum person also has got irregular heartbeats and a very slow pulse. So generally indicated in cardiac disorders, really causing dropsy, this apocynum can. Apocynum can is also indicated in dropsies because of certain poisonings. If you have got a poisoning causing generalized dropsy, you can give apocynum can, because general poisonings can cause irregular heartbeat and slow pulse. In fact, I think a month ago, a girl in India we have got arranged marriages. 70% of people undergo arranged marriages. So her marriage was fixed, and just before marriage she attempted to commit suicide, and she drank a fertilizer. I don't know how that fertilizer had landed up in her house, but she drank a liquid chemical with which we clean the surfaces. So she, I don't remember the chemical, but she came up. I mean, within 2 or 3 hours, or 4 hours at the most, she was brought to my chamber because they are very old patients, and she was completely bloated up, and she had got irregular pulse, very, very slow pulse, ranging about 48 to 52 beats per minute, but quite irregular. Very thirsty. At that time, we had given her apocynum can. And of course, gastric lavage was done, and she was saved. So, such is the condition where you have generalized dropsy of apocynum can. Debbie, are you there?
Yes, I am here. And so this young woman lived. I don't know.
She's perfectly fine. And
did she go through with the marriage? I don't know.
No. She is a chartered accountant. I mean, very qualified. And her parents had asked her permission before fixing the marriage. And she had said yes, yes. But within 2 or 3 months, just before the marriage, she, I mean, unfortunately committed this act of suicide. She was saved. I never thought apocynum could save people. But yes, in this girl, it did.
So people go to... Yeah, people go to many lengths to get out of a marriage arrangement.
Exactly. I mean, in particular in India, we have been seeing these things for a pretty long time now, because arranged marriages are more a rule than an exception. And love marriages are more an exception than the rule.
Okay.
And then we have got dropsy, if we have got, because of hypothyroidism, myxedema particularly, if myxedema starts developing, then it continues unabated. Even if the thyroid levels come back to normal, still there is a sensation of heaviness in the legs, heaviness in the entire body. The person does not feel enthusiastic enough to work. So people may take external eltrogen or thyroid hormones, but still thyroid in homeopathy in very low potencies like 1x, 2x or 3x to be repeated twice daily, over a period of 1 month or 2 months, stabilizes the dropsy of those limbs and definitely helps in weight reduction of hypothyroid people. Because hypothyroid people, in spite of giving constitutional remedies, their thyroid levels do stabilize, but they do not seem to lose weight. They keep on sticking. Once the weighing machine, the meter is stuck at one place, and they keep on complaining, "Doc, I don't eat much. I exercise also, but problem is, I have not lost a single inch." So in such patients, I give them thyroidinum 1x, 2x or 3x at the most, to be repeated twice a day for 1 or 2 months, along with blood group diet. And we can easily lose up to 10 to 12 kgs a month.
I have a question about Hashimoto's disease.
Okay.
Is that related at all to the remedies that you're going to be talking about with edema?
Well, Hashimoto's the thyroiditis is an autoimmune disorder. In some females, there's an autoimmune, auto means self and immune means related to immune system. What happens is there is antibodies produced to certain cells of the thyroid gland, and because of which the entire thyroid becomes very painful, and we have symptoms of severe hypothyroidism or rarely hyperthyroidism, in which the patient gets bloated up, the patients have got all the constipation, patient may land up in depression, the heart rate goes down, and the patient is at a lower ebb. In hypothyroidism, of course, Hashimoto's disease, I think in Feb of this year, I have treated a case of Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and very successful homeopathy by using belladonna. We had given her belladonna. She had come in an acute stage, very painful stage, and she settled down with belladonna. Of course, it took us 12 to 13 days of belladonna. A young female, aged around 32, 33 years. And she had taken, I think, oral contraceptive pills. After that, she had gone for a vacation to some place, and she came back to Nagpur and started experiencing pain in the throat. Initially, she thought that it would be a pharyngitis, so she did not mind. But day in, day out, it increased. And then she had come along with one of her friends. First time consultation with homeopathy. She had not taken any antibiotics, not even steroids, anything for that condition. And I'm so happy that with simple Belladonna, we did given her Belladonna 0/1. And within 12 to 13 days, she responded. She settled down. Then we checked her thyroid levels. She had got hypothyroidism. And we had given her, in fact, thyroidism one course. I told her to wait and directly don't jump on to allopathic thyroxine. Instead, let us see if I could manage with homeopathy. She gave us a chance. And we gave her thyroidism for 1 month. After that, she was settled down. We gave her Kalicarb as a constitutional remedy, repeated again 2 or 3 months after that, and she's still continuing perfectly fine.
Excellent. So we can see that it can be a first choice.
Yeah, definitely. And it was very incidentally that she was supposed to go to an endocrinologist for her thyroid problem. But because her friend was coming to me, she said, why not take a homeopathic consultation? And she, although she knew that I practice only cardiac patients, but still she showed me. And she trusted me in the first place, gave me time, at least 4 to 5 months. Or else she could have easily taken allopathic L-troxin and could have been stabilized. But then, or she could have taken steroids or antibiotics for that matter, if they were permissible. But then she gave homeopathy a chance and she's still continuing with me. She's perfectly well. She has got no symptoms and we have been continually doing every 2 months the thyroid levels and they are normal.
Okay, and the
last dose of Kalicarb I had given was in June 2012.
The other point in the story of this young woman, age 33, is that it was initiated after taking oral contraceptive pills. So something like that affects the hormones in
maybe
an unusual way.
I was not sure because she had taken the OCPs, oral contraceptive pills, had gone on a vacation. So we were quite not sure. So that's why I did not take the ailment from. For example, in this patient, which I had narrated before the discussion, a case of leukemia. There I had a very significant point in the history that her daughter committed suicide 9 months ago. And since 7 months, she started developing fever along with dropsy. So we do have a continuum, a very fixed ailment from. So we can abruptly take natriuretic. But of course, natriuretic is also the drug given in fever without chills. And also the drug given in dropsy. So definitely covered all the. Today also her son had come to me to discuss whether to go in for chemotherapy or to continue with homeopathy. I said, that's your call. I have given you results only in 2 or 3 days. I am the person who actually suspected leukemia. So I could send you to a hemato-oncologist. So if you trust me, if you trust homeopathy, welcome. If not, then it's your call. So, if such patients give us chance, I think we can really do so much for them.
Mm-hmm. The body has an incredible ability to heal, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And if the vital force is correctly stimulated, and it can be correctly stimulated by giving the correct medicines, in the correct potency also. So the potency is correct, should be correct, the medicine should be correct. At the same time, so ailment from, if you have a specific mental ailment or a physical ailment from, if you're very sure of that event, then directly you can take a medicine relating to that. In this case, it could have been natriuretic or gelsemium because ailment from grief. There is nothing as ailment from shock. We can't take aconite because aconite is too sudden an event. So, and it's not so long lasting. It's now 7 months for that event. 9 months. So that's why we chose natriuretic. And it really responded only 2 days. I had not expected such a miraculous result myself. So it does help.
Okay, So you're teaching us quite a bit also about thyroidinum and the possibilities for persons who have a difficult time losing weight and having edema and where we
because
see
because of hypothyroidism.
Yes,
yeah.
And we see it very much in their appearance and how they
exactly.
feel.
I mean, thyroidinum is a very, very big drug in homeopathy, and it can be used for two purposes. Number one, it can be used as a constitutional drug. I mean, thyroidism is a completely proved remedy. So if you have a patient, whichever disease he or she may be suffering from, has got symptoms of thyroidism, then you can give thyroidism as a constitutional drug. That is one use of thyroidism in homeopathy. The second usage is, as I am telling you now, it is a symptomatic or pathological use, as you can call it, and it is a short-acting use of the thyroidism drug, but a very essential drug or a use when we are practicing clinicians, because there are certain symptoms which do not respond to many medicines. Even constitutional therapies do not seem to tackle those particular symptoms, and weight loss is one such nuisance which patients suffer from, not only psychologically but also physically, and they desperately want to lose weight. They are trying, they are doing the exercises, they are taking care of the diet, but still the weight doesn't seem to budge, the edema doesn't seem to budge. Then what do you do? And at the end of the topic to all, you have got good normal values or stabilized values of thyroid levels with allopathic drugs. Still then, now an allopath cannot do much about that. The only drug he can give is a diuretic. But then diuretics do not help. They do not help you to lose weight and myxedema. Then what do? Then you take recourse to such drugs like thyroidism and reduce it. It may take 1, 2, 3 months, but then it does act. At least in my patients, it acts.
Okay, can you tell us again, is this a tincture, mother tincture? Is this an LM? What is this?
No. In the decimal scale, 1x, 2x, or 3x max.
Okay.
So you don't prove the drug. You only give it in very, very low potencies. You can repeat it twice a day. And the patient is happy taking it, at the same time experiencing weight loss. You see, sometimes in such cases, if you ask them to do heavy exercises, and if it's particularly in females who are around 40, 45 years, menopausal or perimenopausal, and they're suffering from hypothyroidism, such females, if they starve or if they lose weight very fast only by starving and or heavy exercises, they land up with gallstones. So this creates a very bigger problem. So the hypothyroidism is still there, and at the end topic of you are having gallstones to deal with. So what do you do with such cases? So you can't even tell them to reduce fast. You have to reduce them at a particular pace. So 3 to 4 kgs in 1 month is fairly enough. I mean, it's fairly good. And it should look, it should not be only on the meter, or not only in the weighing machine. The people themselves should find the change. Loosening of the clothes, your relatives or your friends telling you that you have really lost weight, the chubbiness under the edema should go away. So all these things count in daily practice, doesn't it?
Right, so they're getting the feedback emotionally, physically, mentally from other people. So that constant feedback encourages them to keep going.
Exactly, because it's not only the doctor they have to face. They have to face themselves in the mirror daily. They have to face their families, their workplaces, the people around the workplaces. So if they're actually losing weight, then the people around you encourage you to lose further. And drugs like thyroidinum help to enhance the effect.
Okay. Good.
Then we have got dropsy due to organ dysfunction, particular organ dysfunction, for example, kidney diseases, one of the commonest organs which... I mean, if you have a case of dropsy, you first think of kidney. And if you think of kidney, the first drug you think is Apis mellifica, one of the finest remedies you have got. And, of course, specifically related for diseases in which the kidney tissue is inflamed, that is scarlatina, and the patient has to be thirstless, the skin is pale, waxen, transparent, scanty urine, or... sometimes you can have rash, you may not have rash, but what is important is thirstlessness. Of course, you can use Apis mellifica in generalized dropsy as well when the patient is less thirsty. Because I had, in this case, I had also thought of Apis, the case of leukemia, when because she's a thirstless patient. So fever, dropsy, I did think of Apis, but then since I had natriuretic at my hand, natriuretic was given first. And Apis and natriuretic go hand in hand. They are cognates of each other. So even if you can, if you want to give APIS after natrimuriaticum, it's perfectly fine. It completes the action of natrimur. Vice versa is also true. If you have started a patient on APIS and you think of natrimur, you still can give natrimuriaticum after APIS. It will complete the action of APIS. Both drugs go hand in hand, are beneficial to each other, one after another.
We have a comment in the chat from Gabrielle, and she asks, what is the case with people who have had their thyroid removed, or I can even think their thyroid radiated due to some problem, and are on medication? Can, and I think she's talking about the apocynum, can that help, or the thyroidinum?
No. Apocynum would not help. Apocynum is a very small remedy, and it's specifically indicated for dropsy, which is generally of non-thyroid origin, in pitting type.
Okay.
See, thyroid edema or myxedema is a non-pitting edema, whereas apocynum is indicated in pitting edemas, where you should have lots of fluid. So, generally in such cases, we would think of natrimuriaticum or thyroidinum, not of drugs like arsenic or APIS or even apocynum and acetic acid. Yeah, acetic acid can be thought of, but definitely not apocynum.
Okay. I misspoke. I think she is inquiring about 1X, 2X, 3X of the thyroidinum.
Yeah, definitely you can use.
Even if they've had their thyroid removed.
See, even if you have got your thyroid removed, then the only thing you are surviving is on external thyroid hormone.
Okay.
You can take in pills of 50 micrograms or 25 micrograms or 100 micrograms or 150 micrograms, whatever is the requirement. But thyroidinum is not only for the thyroid gland. It is actually for the thyroid metabolism. So it definitely would aid or help the external thyroid to function far better. So the target organs which thyroid is targeting will be better sensitized with thyroidinum. So there's no harm definitely in taking thyroidinum in patients who have got irradiated thyroid glands. That means the thyroid gland has been radiated with iodine or removed surgically or has been destroyed by some autoimmune phenomena like Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Okay, she's very happy. She said, perfect, thank you.
Okay. Then another very important remedy to be thought of in dropsy, particularly because of kidney diseases, when you have got acute renal failure. If there's a person who has got a severe kidney infection and lands up in kidney failure, one of the first drugs before APIS does not work here, one of the first drugs to be thought of is terebinth. Terebinthinum is a wonderful remedy, particularly in destruction of kidney tissues or when the kidney is shut down or there's an acute renal failure. You give few doses of terebinth and the kidney starts functioning. And how do you know that the kidney has stopped functioning? How do you know that the patient has landed up in acute renal failure, acute glomerular filtration, acute ARF?
Maybe they're not urinating. Are they
not urinating? Yes, the urine volume decreases, but the urine becomes very dark and smoky. So there's hematuria, but the hematuria is not fresh. The bleeding is not fresh, and there's a pain in the loin region, the kidney region. And that is the time you may have fever, you may not have fever. This also occurs sometimes in severe urine tract infection. When the person has got severe urine tract infection, one of the wonderful drugs is terebinth. People often think of only APIS and cantharis. But I should remind you that if there is a dropsy, if there is swelling, and particularly if there is swelling in the lower limbs or around the kidney region, one should also think of terebinth. Then you have got acute dropsy due to suppression of urine in squilla maritima. Now squilla, a drug which is very few people know about and very few people use it clinically, but a very good remedy for suppression of urine. This particularly happens in post-operative cases. I mean, see, sometimes you give anesthesia or spinal anesthesia, and after the patient has come out of the anesthesia, there is acute suppression of urine. There is no urination. So, although the blood pressure is normal, but in spite of that, urination is not there. In such situations, you can use drugs like Squalane maritima to be used in potency of 30 or more. We may give staphylococci also. Staphylococci also initiates urination, but Squalane is specifically indicated when the patient starts developing dropsy. In such cases, Apis, Acanthus, or Terebinth do not act. It is Squalane wherein you have acute dropsy. Sudden nausea, I mean, the patient was perfectly normal before the surgery. After the surgery, you have brought the patient out. Anesthesia has, I mean, the effect of anesthesia has waned off. And now you are having swelling. You can see the patient has slight swelling below the lids. You can see swelling of the feet. And the urine quantity has gone down. So the allopathic doctor would give Lasix or Lasylactone, that is a diuretic. In homeopathy, we can use Squalane maritima. At the most, if you don't have Squalane in 30 potency, then you can use mother tincture. But generally, it is indicated potency is above 30. You can repeat it, I mean, every 1 hour or 2 hour. And moment the urination starts, stop the drug Squalane.
And it is a sea onion. Is that correct?
Yeah, these, yes, exactly.
Okay, so this is a plant.
Yeah. Then certain rare remedies. Rare remedies which very few people, even homeopaths, know about is one is cochlearia. C-O-C-H-L-E-A-R-I-A, cochlearia. Cochlea basically means the inner ear. And we have a remedy which the name similar, but it is not made from inner ear, it's cochlearia. And then you have got fumaric acid, a wonderful remedy, particularly in used fumaric acid. I remember using it in malignancies of the kidney, in renal malignancies which occur Ewing's sarcoma, kidney malignancies if it occurs. Then if the urine stops and the patient is having dropsy, then fumaric acid is the drug of choice. It is not Squalane, because again in fumaric acid there is no relation to thirst. These drugs are tried when the routine drugs like Apis and Acanthus and Terebinth fail. Only then you can go on to such drugs like Stigmata Medis or Fumaric Acid or Galega or Lupulus. Lupulus Homulus, L-U-P-U-L-U-S, a very, very good drug for dropsy, not only because of kidney diseases, but also dropsy because of cardiac diseases, particularly in rheumatic heart fever. Rheumatic heart diseases, when it affects the rheumatic walls or causes congestive cardiac failure, then you can use Lupulus, a wonderful drug. Then you can have Lupulus used in right heart failure and left heart failure. If you have got left heart failure, then you have got rails in the lungs. That is, if you put a stethoscope, you will have bubbling sound. You can have cough, you can have breathlessness. That is left heart failure. But in right heart failure, you can have a raised jugular vein. The pressure in the jugular vein is raised. If you turn the neck sideways, then you can have, on the right side, the jugular vein, you can see, you'll find the pulsations. So you have a raised jugular vein, you can have edema or dropsy of the feet, and you can have a mild hepatomegaly, that is, liver is enlarged. If you have got a combination of these three, then this is an ideal situation where you can use Lupulus.
We have quite a few guests. If anyone in the chat has a question or a comment, we are here and I will relate it to Dr. Adil if you have a question.
Going further, we have got dropsy due to organ dysfunction, again, heart failure. And suppose, for whatever reason, if the heart fails, either the commonest reason in adults would be as a result of an untreated heart attack or myocardial infarction, or it can be because of rheumatic fever leading to rheumatic heart disease and then failure, or it can be because of host of other conditions, but these two are commonest. In children, you can have congenital heart disease ultimately leading to heart failure, and in few others you can have a permanent state of heart failure which is called as cardiomyopathy. We had discussed this cardiomyopathy on page number 828, when we had discussed about dilatation of heart, and we had talked about dilated cardiomyopathy, we had talked about cactus, but heart failure again, the very, very important drug, first drug to be thought of is digitalis, And I'm so happy. I mean, we have conducted studies in 2007 and 2008. We had seen two sets of patients, one with allopathic digitalis, because in allopathy also they use digitalis by the name of Lanoxin. And in homeopathy, we have digitalis. And we could see both the drugs acting similarly. As far as action was concerned, digitalis in mother tincture we had used had the same effect as digitalis in allopathic 0.25 milligrams per day, 5 days a week. That is the standard dose in allopathy they give for heart failure in digitalis. But what we further saw in digitalis homeopathically, of all these years we have been seeing, is there are several cases of digitalis poisoning in allopathy. And how do we know that digitalis toxicity occurs? We can measure digitalis levels in the plasma. Then you can have traces of jaundice, liver enlargement, painful liver, loss of appetite, nausea, and loads of other things. Even in ECG, there are particular findings of digitalis toxicity. So when this happens, then you have to stop digitalis allopathy. Such a situation has not been known in homeopathy, in spite of the fact that people have been taking digitalis, homeopathy digitalis, in mother tincture or in potency like 6 and 30 for at least more than 20-25 years, if they live such long. At least I have known, I have a patient who's 15 years who's taking digitalis, homeopathic digitalis, 6, and perfectly well. No symptoms of digitalis overdose or poisoning.
And you're talking about 6X or 6C?
6C.
6C, okay. Yeah. And when you say you use the mother tinctures and those are homeopathic, mother tinctures, they are not succussed yet. They are not potentized. But you're saying they are homeopathic based on the
homeopathy, yes. Mother tinctures, Hahnemann himself has used. Hahnemann himself has given permission. On page number 194 of Close. Close has written a book on philosophy, and if you read the page number 194, he has specifically given a case of digitalis mother tincture being homeopathic to that case. And he has exhorted that it's only homeopaths who can use, homeopaths are allowed to use a wide range of potencies, ranging right from the mother tinctures up to the millisimal scale. So mother tinctures are definitely homeopathic, and people who use mother tinctures, they are homeopaths. So in certain cases, you have to use them. If you have an organ remedy, fine. If the disease is far advanced, still you can use. You can't use potencies for such a long time, 10 years, 12 years, is a long, long period. People have been using Crataegus. Left, right, and center, if they have to think about heart, here in India at least, they keep on buying Crataegus and keep on taking loads of them, and still they are doing pretty well.
Did you say Crataegus? What did you say?
Yeah, Crataegus. Yeah.
Okay, so people have been using this remedy for a long time, for decades even.
Yeah. So in such cases, you can't give them potencies. You can give potencies for a particular month, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. But that's at the most. Then you have to stop the drug. And certain drugs need to be given daily on a daily basis or for a pretty long time. May not be daily, you can alternate day or once a week. But then if you have to take for 10 years or 15 years, then you can't shift on definitely to potencies. You have to restrict yourself to mother tinctures. And digitalis is one such drug.
Okay, so I had no idea that the time has flown so quickly. we are at the hour, and
yeah.
I just gave us a little bit more time if you want to say
a few
more.
I finish off digitalis. So an excellent drug. Very important thing is it is a very good drug for cardiac dropsies, but here the drug should be feeble and irregular. If you have to administer digitalis, make sure that the patient's pulse is irregular pulse, is a very low volume pulse, is a feeble pulse. And you can have hydropericardium, hydrothorax, dropsy everywhere, and digitalis would respond. Anasarca with a bluish cyanotic tinge. Then another drug is Lachesis. Of course, Lachesis is given in acute dropsy because of heart failure. When you have got heart acute left ventricular failure or acute right ventricular failure, then probably you may think of Lachesis. Again, hydrothorax. If you have pneumohydrothorax or hydrothorax, moment you put a... See, pneumo means air. And air has got no business traveling in the pleura. If it does so, then it will kill you if you don't remove that air. So if with a thick bore needle, you remove the air. And if you want to prevent it, you can give drugs like Lachesis. Spigelia, excellent drug for pericardial effusion. That is a drug around the... effusion around the pericardium. And we have got drugs like arsenic and colchicum and digitalis, Lachesis, Lycopodium. Sulfur and zincum are mentioned on page number 829. But Spigelia has not been mentioned. But I have added Spigelia. It's a very specific drug. Of course, also astrophanthus in pericardial effusion, a wonderful drug. It reduces, it aids the patient, and particularly specifically used in left heart failure. And Spigelia is again a wonderful drug for tuberculous pericardial effusion. Tuberculosis is a very common disease affecting developing countries like India and Indian subcontinent. And you do get patients of tuberculous pericarditis. Even in spite of taking anti-TB remedies, still pericardial effusion may not resort. But by giving Spigelia in potency, infrequent repetitions, the effusion goes away and settles down. We have had cases in Aata Center responding to Spigelia, tuberculous pericarditis, or pericardial effusion, sorry.
We have a question in the chat. I'm trying to find this last one. It was from Dr. Wakor. What did he ask? Convallaria majalia? I don't know where he came from that, but that was a question that he posed.
Yeah, another wonderful remedy. I have not mentioned about convallaria majalis, but convallaria majalis is, would not think of a prototype drug for dropsy because of heart failure. It's a drug, a very slow-acting drug. In cases of venous engorgements, whenever you have got venous engorgements in many other cases, in that conditions, you can have convallaria majalis. Of course, you can have convallaria majalis in pulmonary hypertension or right heart failure because of pulmonary hypertension. Yes, it does have a role to play. Convallaria majalis, lithium carb, Iberis, several drugs which I have not mentioned here. But yes, he or she, whosoever the question who's posing, is right in asking about convallaria majalis at this state of time.
Okay, that was Dr. Wakor from Florida. He says thank you.
Thank you. So I think we need to continue with this dropsy again. And we have got certain few more slides. And then we would be speaking about directly about emphysema. Again, we have got loads to speak. I don't know when will we finish. We are still on E. And we have got so many pages to finish. Chest. It's going to take another year of finishing chest chapter, I believe.
I don't think we have any time limit. You're only going to be 40. We have plenty of time. I don't know about myself, but you're much younger than I am. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, I was just thinking the other day. I mean, each rubric we are discussing at such length, and for a single rubric, I'm taking two lectures. So I was wondering when will I finish chess? And then I was hoping to discuss about respiration, and I was also hoping to discuss about cough, but I don't know when the time will come. Hopefully, it will come someday.
If you have a special, you know, we could do a special break from the chest chapter and throw in a cough or something. So
no, as it is, we are discussing much about other things also than our routine chest chapter. In fact, about two or three shows or more than that, we had solely devoted to answering questions and leaving apart the rubrics. So I believe that let's continue with this slow and steady, and then hopefully we'll finish in time.
Right. And people have always, you know, they can still ask their questions, and we will take a break from our series in order to answer questions. So thank you again for being with us today, for giving us a history, for dedicating today's show to Dr. Mahendra Singh, a legend in our time who left the earth this week. And also you mentioned Dr. Pierre Schmidt. Okay, so if anybody's interested, go ahead and look up some more history about these homeopaths in the past. And please follow us on Facebook. We have a growing page there with lots of information and inspiration. So that's Facebook, Homeopathy World Community. Listen to our shows on, well, every Wednesday at 11:30, we're here, but all of our archives are also available on Homeopathy World Community. Thursday, we are up with Alan Phillips about vaccinations and your rights, and we almost fight for that. And on Monday, we have the Health In Show, and that is a live video stream show. I believe next Monday, we're going to have a guest, Erica Perlow, talking about bullying, and she is an attorney at law who got very upset when her daughter was bullied at school and became an advocate and changed the system. Last week, and this is really fascinating, we had Dr. Philip Hoekstra give an entire PowerPoint presentation about thermology and how that can detect changes in the cellular tissue of the breast 5 to 8 years before mammography, whereas mammography, as you know, radiation is a cause of cancer, and also the treatment to the breast is not very gentle. So this is a great way, even if you're age 25, to get your baseline of a thermology, or is it a thermoscan, is his brand name. And I hope that he's going to be on again with a lot of really cutting-edge information about Fukushima and radiation and what that's doing to our body and to our thyroid. So it sounds exciting, doesn't it, Dr. Otto?
Exactly. And in fact, ragging is banned in India by law. And we have got several cases in ragging in colleges and schools, what we call, what you have referred as bullying. And it ensures severe punishment if anything such happens. And it was a routine in our times in medical college. We used to be ragged, and we used to rag also. I mean, I must admit. But then times were different. The entire practice of being friendlier started becoming more murkier, and we had two or three deaths in our own institution, in medical colleges and throughout India. So it is strictly banned in our country, in all colleges whatsoever. And people do take special precautions. The teachers, the entire administrative staff do take special precautions. When the new batch enters the colleges or in the school, then they should not be bullied or ragged. So I'm so happy that such a matter is being discussed on your show.
Yes, if you have any input, if you know, because it sounds like it's under control in India, whereas many youth, teens, are committing suicide very often due to this bullying by individuals and groups of people. So if you...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in India, see, although we have a cosmopolitan society, but this matter had engulfed so many colleges and institutes, and we had got so many deaths at a particular period of time, that it was high time the government of India came forward, took some stern action. And it was actually because of the behest of parents. Many parents and advocates, many doctors and intellectuals, they came forward, they put this point forth, and they made the government to pass this rule. Not only pass the rule, there are millions and thousands of rules which keep on passing, but then government has actually acted. And every university, every college makes it sure that this does not happen and we do not lose a life. Not only losing a life, but there are certain mental scars which live with you throughout your life. You can't shake it off.
Exactly. And that's where therapy, hypnosis, relaxation, and homeopathy can help. So let me ask you, if you have a contact person of anyone who can teach us more about how these programs were implemented and how they work, that would be a wonderful show for us.
Surely. I mean, I could definitely try. I do have one advocate friend, a lawyer friend, and I would ask him if he can throw light about it. In fact, today itself, I had a patient aged 40 years, and he has come to me with acid peptic disease and irritable bowel syndrome. And it started, I said, for how long he's been having this? And he started, he said, today he's a contractor. I mean, he builds buildings. So I said, are you successful in your life? He said, yeah, definitely I'm successful. But then I wanted to pursue education. This is not an educated man's job. So I said, why didn't you pursue education? He said, my entire thing dates back when I first entered my college in the first sophomore year. And the first year I was ragged, and that scar has still not left me. So the drug which I gave him today was Staphylococcus. He said, I was humiliated, I was abused, and I just cannot forget those faces. Of course, I did not bully the other batch, the next batch, but then that scar has left such a deep impact that I joined college for 1 year, 2 years, I finished those 2 years of college, and since then, I have not pursued education and I could not go to school. I could not even go for private coaching classes. So that is the situation. And today I gave him Staphylococcus for irritable bowel syndrome. Although in Staphylococcus, not a single mention of IBS is there. But I'm sure Staphylococcus will take care of this syndrome. So today itself, just now at 5 o'clock in the evening, I saw this patient.
Very, very good. So this eased his mind, and maybe he could go forward with his life without the scar.
Why not? Because he particularly said, Doc, I know it's wrong, but I just can't forget that incident. The moment I even pass by some big colleges, I only dream of my ambition, and then that entire scenario comes in front of me, and I just walk away from that place. How can you help me? These were his words. And yes, I'm sure Staphylococcus is going to help him. That scar, although it's created 20 years or 25 years ago, can be dealt with. And he may, if he wishes to pursue some ongoing education in a particular college, he would be able to do so.
Okay. Well, we are looking forward to all of the shows and, of course, to your show next Wednesday at 11:30. Oh, wait a minute. Next Wednesday, we're going to have probably a break from a show because I'm going to be visiting my mother. And
okay.
And so
how's Alzheimer's? Alzheimer's is all right?
What is that?
Alzheimer's. She's suffering from Alzheimer's disease, right?
She is doing very well. She's being well cared for, and she even uses Skype. So
wow, that's
so. And she continues to be active, plays her instrument. She's in a band, and she does get on even age 87. So she's pretty active.
Wow, and that's good. Very good to hear.
Thank God. Okay, we will see you in the following week, and that will be
31st of October.
31st. Okay, the last day of the month. Okay, enjoy everyone, and we're going to say goodbye for today.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chinsanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.